Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. It's Tuesday, January 22nd, 2013. I'm David Knight, and here are our top stories.
Tonight, a shocking claim from one of America's foremost military heroes, who says Obama is asking military leaders if they will fire on U.S. citizens. Then, welcome to the police state. A Miami man is viciously attacked by security guards after being told it is illegal to photograph the rail portion of the train. Meanwhile, back at the inauguration, TSA agents grope attendees and Beyonce lip-syncs the national anthem. All hail Obama on the InfoWars Nightly News.
We have breaking news about a shooting in a nearby college just north of Houston. The details are not clear yet, but what's most interesting is the way that it's being covered by the media. Alex has some information about that.
He said, I don't want to fight you. I'm not trying to go to jail. And he actually turned away from the situation. But whatever ticked him off, whatever they said, turned around, got it out of his backpack, and just started shooting.
As of airtime, three people were shot earlier today at the Lone Star College in Houston, Texas. And early on, I said it's either going to be another serotonin reuptake inhibitor Prozac head who's into mass shooting games and death that's done this. If it's a really big shooting, and I said, God forbid, or it'll be two gangbanger types shooting at each other, gang-related, which most, quote, mass shootings are. In fact, most crime is different criminals shooting at each other. And sure enough, one shooter is still on the run. One of the three shot is one of the reported shooters who were shooting at each other. And then two students were hit in the crossfire, and the eyewitnesses are out there. So, number one, this is a tragedy. But number two, thank God it wasn't a real mass shooting with 25, 30 people killed, including little children. Doesn't matter if statistically you've got a better chance of being struck by lightning, according to the FBI's own crime numbers, than dying in a mass shooting. Doesn't matter if your swimming pool is many, many, many times more deadly than guns, period. The media, the corporate media, is able to evoke all these fears. And they've set it up where every time there's a new shooting, it's gun owners' fault. It'd be like every time there's a stabbing, it's knife owners' fault. You know, you own that block of butcher knives, and somebody got stabbed, and Albuquerque today, 1,000 miles away, it's your fault. This is the ridiculous mindset they've put out. While the establishment arms itself to the teeth and is protected on their red carpets by armed men. So there's this major move to disarm us. But the reason I wanted to file this report tonight on the Nightly News is because I saw something unprecedented today. During breaks on the radio, we were also playing clips of local news on air. We saw reports where CNN and other corporate media cable channels were saying, we're not going to show you the live helicopter feeds out of KHOU in Houston in case you see something violent and see something bad, to protect you.
The North Harris campus is on lockdown. This is an active situation. We are not showing you live pictures because of what we may possibly see. As a result, we are showing you delayed tape pictures.
Now, even in Vietnam, they would show the film reels, and it wasn't even live, of children running naked down the dirt road with their skin burned off, because it's documentary. You have a right to see what the government's doing. Bush started not allowing coffins to be photographed coming into Dover, Maine, and other bases from the Iraq War. Now the media doesn't even go show them when they come in, so there's no need for Obama to ban it. So this self-censorship by CNN, so that they could later craft the most scary parts after the shooting and put them out, is disgusting. And I knew they'd do that. I talked about that on radio. As soon as it came out that it was some type of crime-related deal and that one of the three shot was one of the reported shooters, alleged shooters, they shifted into acting like they were live again, showing people running in fear and showing SWAT teams going into the buildings. So truly unprecedented that they're still hyping it and the danger of guns right now when it is a tragic event, but still on the Richter scale, on a scale of 1 to 10, it doesn't even register as a 0.1/1,000th on the 1. You're like, ah, that's pretty mean, Alex. Three people were shot. Look, folks, governments killed 200+ million people, non-military deaths. That's government lining up men, women, and children and shooting them and stuff under democide. Major university studies, University of Hawaii, you name it. They're the biggest threat. As Stalin said, one man is a tragedy, a million is a statistic. He also said one man's a tragedy, 10,000 is a statistic. They know this. They understand this. And so they take these events and hype up the fear. The truth is, gun violence is way down. Violent crime is way down from the FBI's own statistics. Some numbers are up to 49% overall. Crime using guns is down 20-something percent the last few decades overall violent crime. I mean, the numbers are amazing. They don't want you to know the facts. They want you to have an emotional response. But that clip we just played of CNN over and over again, we are not going to show you this in case you see something bad. We're going to protect you. You've got to trust us so we can later show you what we want you to see. Same thing with Sandy Hook. They didn't want you seeing local news feeds because they don't want you questioning what's happening. They want to be able to spin the official narrative they want. And this is directly out of 1984. All right, that's it for this basic breakdown. We'll cover more of this on the radio, 11 a.m. Central tomorrow, when we know a lot more. But back to InfoWars Nightly News and your host, David Knight.
Well, this is an interesting case for me to see how this is unfolding live, to see how the media is manipulating the story. I was also surprised at the amount of time that they spent on this story. Is it really worth several hours that just a couple of people have an argument and a couple of people get shot? I mean, it's a tragedy, but if this was three or four people taken to a hospital because it was an automobile accident, would that be that newsworthy as a national story? Would it be something that the news media would then call for everyone who has an automobile to come under greater scrutiny and to have their cars taken away from them because somebody had an automobile accident? But that's essentially what's being done with gun owners. And there's some shocking news about what is being done in the military. And this comes from a credible source. A Nobel Peace Prize nominee says that Obama asked military leaders if they will fire on U.S. citizens. This is a shock claim that is purported to come from one of America's foremost military heroes. Now, the person who makes this claim is somebody that has a great deal of credibility, in my opinion. This is someone who was a 2009 Nobel Peace Prize nominee, Jim Garrow. Dr. Garrow is someone who actually created an organization called the Pink Pagoda Girls. Now, if you think back to 2009, Obama won the Peace Prize, even though he had not done anything. At the time, he had just assumed office. All he had done is win the presidential election. Nothing that is worthy of a peace prize. And we've seen in the ensuing years that he's created war after war. He's assassinating people with drones, creating kill lists, calling for indefinite detention without trial. This is the person that they gave a peace prize to before he did anything. But Dr. Garrow, at the time, had a very long record of intervening and saving girls in China who were exposed to gendercide. As part of their one-child policy, female children are not as wanted as male children. And my wife and I adopted a child from China, so we know a great deal about this. And this person, Dr. Garrow, saved 36,000 young girls at least. Now, he has a source that told him that he says, I've just been informed by a former senior military leader that Obama is using a new litmus test in determining who will stay and who will go among his military leaders. Get ready to explode, folks. He says the new litmus test of leadership in the military is if they will fire on U.S. citizens or not. One of America's foremost military heroes, he said, whose goal in divulging the information was to sound the alarm. You know, we've seen this before. We've seen civil disturbance operations. The article references that. It's got links to the PDF, so you can see the evidence for yourself. We've had internment and resettlement operations, also links within the article. We know that the government has been stockpiling billions of hollow point bullets. Those are anti-personnel bullets. Those are bullets that are not used by the military. They're used against people. They're used by governments for crowd control. They're banned by Geneva Convention for military use. And it's, of course, not the military that's buying these bullets. And these bullets in that quantity are much greater than what we've seen the military typically go through in several years of an actual war. And last week, we saw a New York mayor say that with these new gun regulations, he would not be surprised to see many more Wacos happening. And so I guess the government is preparing for that as well. Now we have gun owners are not standing still, though. Throughout this weekend, we had state capitals across the country. Hundreds and thousands of people showed up at the state capitals to rally in defense and in support of the Second Amendment, to make it clear that the government should not cross that line. And we have a report from our reporter, Dan Bedondi, about what happened in Rhode Island.
This is Dan Bedondi reporting for the InfoWars Nightly News, and we are in Providence, Rhode Island at the National Pro-Second Amendment Rally, one of many cities that is protesting the government to try to take our arms. And we got over 300 supporters out here in the brisk cold to support the Second Amendment. If the orders come, the day comes, it says, when it becomes a law, you have to turn in your guns. Are you turning in your guns?
No.
I know it's a bit cold out here, everybody's freezing, and it's crazy, but 300 people that showed up here, are you surprised of the turnout?
I'm very glad that people understood that they had more important things to do than watching football today. We kind of know about history, and we know where we stand.
I have a feeling that we're going to see a much bigger turnout. This is the spark that we needed. So come February 8th, I think you're going to see some real excitement, some really, really good excitement. People, the gun owners coming out to stand up for each other and stand up for our rights.
Because without the guns, the next step will be they come to your house, and if you don't agree with the government, guarantee you, oh, let's go into a train, let's go to a FEMA camp.
If an unlawful order is given, it is your duty as a sworn representative of that Constitution to stand down and not obey an unlawful order.
Our Second Amendment is under a threat, and people are standing up. We got politicians now standing up. We got oath keepers standing up. We got all kinds of patriotic groups standing up to say, you know what, you're not taking our guns. Government, leave us alone. United Nations, leave us alone. We're going to keep our guns no matter what, and that's it. This is Dan Bedondi reporting for the InfoWars Nightly News.
Well, yesterday, Obama supporters rallied behind Obama at his coronation in Washington. $100 million ceremony where no expense was spared. And 800,000 of them went through TSA scanners. That's right. What better way to celebrate arbitrary power than to bring out the Blue Glove Brigade? We have a video here that was filed by citizen journalist Julio Russo, I believe is the way his name is pronounced, of JN Reports. He went through one of these and filmed it as he was going through. And he wonders aloud, he says, are we entering the presidential inauguration or entering jail? Now, the question is, they've got TSA agents there doing this. They've also got National Guard. They've got FBI agents, Secret Service agents, ATF agents, DHS, Department of Homeland Security, the D.C. police. Do they really need to have everybody get the blue glove treatment from the TSA? Well, I guess they do, because we really need to know who Master is, don't we? Also at the inauguration, there's questions about the authenticity of the music there. Drudge had a headline, she faked it, talking about Beyonce's lip-syncing of the Star Spangled Banner. Turns out that even the Marine Band faked it. Now, that's not that big a deal. I mean, that happens from time to time. The point of it is, though, is that this is a carefully orchestrated, carefully choreographed propaganda set piece. This is the sort of thing that we would see Stalin doing or Hitler doing, a very polished piece to make everybody feel good about our elite leadership. Now, we have, while that was going on and being filmed, we have citizen photographers getting harassed by the police, who still will not acknowledge that citizens have a right to film. Now, this is amazing video, because this guy was filming on a train station platform in Miami, and he wasn't even filming the train station. But the Metro police came out, and first they barked at him over the loudspeakers. Then they sent out several police to confront him. And as he reminded them, it's perfectly legal to do photography in public places. They insisted that he stop. He insisted on pursuing his rights, and eventually they brought out a large group of people, manhandled and took him away. He also has other lawsuits going on with the city of Miami over other incidents where they've shut him down doing photography. It's photographer Carlos Miller. Let's take a look at that video here.
Don't touch me. Don't touch me, guys. Guys.
Don't
touch me, dude.
Oh, come on.
Please stop. I can't see him.
He's not resisting. Can you just...
I can't resist him.
No,
I'm going to jail next. I'm going to resist.
No, I'm not doing anything.
I'm not going to jail next. I'm going to resist this.
Well, way to go, Carlos Miller. I hope you prevail in those lawsuits that you've got going against Miami. You know, that's one thing. We have to stand up for our rights or we're going to lose them. And government insists at every single turn that they can photograph and record everything that we do and say. But they do not want to have us even point a camera at their railroad tracks. At one point in the video, he says, is there something special about these railroad tracks? No, there isn't. There's something special about our rights as citizens to film in public. On an unrelated story, but something that is still very important, it's been uncovered that a toxic gene is hiding in GM crops. This is reported by the Daily Mail out of the United Kingdom. It's why they call it Frankenfoods, I guess. They discovered a virus gene that could be poisonous to humans. And this gene was missed when GM food crops were assessed for safety. Now, these crops were assessed for safety by universities and other organizations that have been tasked with overseeing the changes made to the genetically modified crops. But it was the European Food Safety Authority found what these other groups failed to identify. They found a viral gene known as gene 6, and this can include the creation of proteins that are toxic to humans. It could also trigger changes in the plants themselves, making them more vulnerable to pests. And they said that although this GM process of review has been in place for 20 years, it shows that it is very flawed. Now, one of the strategies that they use genetically modified corn for is they can then spray them with pesticides like Monsanto's Roundup, and the modifications will keep the crops from dying. Unfortunately, what that does is it has a tendency to kill everything else, to kill regular corn and leave people with only the genetically modified corn as a source. And this is something that, besides adulterating the food supply, the fact that we would be limited to only the foods that have been genetically modified sets us up for major problems in the food supply chain. If you have a major failure of all of these crops, if they are the only crops that we're allowed to have, we don't have any heritage or heirloom crops, but we only have these genetically modified crops. If they make a mistake, they don't catch that mistake as they didn't in this particular case. It is something that can have severe health consequences for humans as well as could create massive famines. In another failure of science, we see that Britain has gone tilting at windmills, the quixotic source of renewable energy, windmills again, as they're now calling them an intermittent renewable. And that's because windmills, even though they appear to be turning all the time if they're working, they appear to be constantly working, but they don't, they have peaks and valleys. They cannot supply steady-state electricity like a traditional power plant that is fueled by coal or oil or some other quote-unquote fossil fuel. They have a problem with that. And even though they've taken windmill fields and spread them all up and down the coast of Ireland, it only increases the peaks and values of the power supplied. It's just impossible to get steady-state power out of it. But that's not the real problem in this particular case. And the real problem in this case is that these windmills are being built because they are getting very lucrative subsidies from the government to build renewable energy sources. Alex just went out west, went to the Big Bend National Park, and while he was out there, he said a year ago when he went past the same area, he saw this wind farm, and he said they were almost all working. This time, he only saw one that was working. The rest of them were stuck. They were not even turning. So that's another issue besides the intermittent capacity. And there we have a picture of a bat. It has tremendous environmental issues. Bats fly through these varying pressure fields that are created by the windmills, and they die en masse. And that has severe environmental consequences when the bats die because they play a very important role in the ecology. It's like essentially the same thing that happens when a scuba diver goes through, goes underwater and takes a deep breath and then, raises and gets a lower pressure. It causes an air embolism and causes their lungs to explode. Well, the same thing happens with the bats. They are breathing very rapidly. They take a breath, pass into a low pressure zone, and their lungs explode. But it also has severe consequences for humans who have to live near these things as well. But it's really, for the most part, just kind of a feel-good boondoggle. This is a graphic showing how the intermittent power that is put out by windmills has to be balanced and counteracted by a reliable power source, such as a fossil fuel plant that is burning coal or oil. Well, that's it for our news portion, and that brings us to our quote of the day. This one is from George Mason, one of the founders of the country. He says, "There is a passion natural to the mind of man, especially a free man, which renders him impatient of restraint." Well, stick with us. Right after the break, we've got a very interesting interview with Gerald Celente, who's going to talk about some of the top trends coming up as he sees it in 2013.
I really enjoy it when the globalists try to poison us, and, well, we resist them via a free market system. Hello, my fellow InfoWarriors. Alex Jones here, introducing you to the ProPure family of gravity-fed filters. Now, you know that the globalists are filling our water with radioactive isotopes, fluoride, lead, mercury, arsenic. And one of the few systems that can efficiently and economically remove or reduce down to non-detectable levels these poisons are gravity-fed filters. And ProPure is the top of the line. Their filters are impregnated with silver, a natural antibiotic. On top of that, they're bigger, so they filter faster. You don't have to prime these the first time you use them. It's amazing. Go to InfoWars.com and click on the shopping cart link to see the entire family of these babies. Now, the fluoride they add to our water is so tiny that most filters can't cut it out. But ProPure has their system that will, again, reduce it to non-detectable levels, almost get all of it out of there. That's also available. And if you look at the different systems they offer, the ProPure big brush finish is on a stand, so it's easier on a table or at your restaurant or wherever you have it to go up with a glass or a mug and fill it up. Then there's this big baby right here, the ProPure King large version. Got a lot of different options that come with it. Also, they have the ProPure big, probably one of the best values out there. And of course, it's burnished stainless steel. And then what I use on my RV, something that's great for your hunting cabin or the back porch, is the ProPure Traveler. Small and portable, but packs a huge punch, cleans out all that garbage. They also have a glass sight spigot, so you don't have to take the top off and look in the bottom area to see how much water. You can see how fast it's filtering with this optional system. The globalists obviously are hitting us through our water. It's time to take control of our lives. It's time to not give our children and families these poisons. And these systems cut it down to non-detectable levels across the board. ProPure is the name. I only promote what I believe in. And I use ProPure in my home and my office. And I recommend that you check out the information on ProPure at InfoWars.com. We already have the lowest price at InfoWars.com on the ProPure gravity filter system. But when you add in the 10% off when InfoWarriors use the product code WATER at InfoWars.com, nobody can top it. So again, it's a win-win-win. Stop drinking the poison water. Checkmate the globalists when it comes to your health, and support InfoWars.com and the work we're doing here. You know, many revolutionaries rob banks and things and kidnap people for funds. We promote in the free market the products we use that are about preparedness. That's how we fund this revolution against the New World Order in our move to restore our constitutional republic and a spirit of 1776 worldwide. Check it out at InfoWars.com. ProPure, top of the line, number one, most powerful and effective and economical gravity-fed water system in the world. ProPure, available, discounted at InfoWars.com. Don't forget product code WATER to save 10%. It's the latest generation, years in development. ProPure is the name.
Christy Hightower here with a quick Planet InfoWars update. I want to start this off with a quick quote from Thomas Edison. Now, there are three great essential things to achieve anything worthwhile. First, hard work. Second, stick-to-itness. I don't know if that's technically a word, but stick-to-itness. And three, common sense. Now, I think this last one, we all know, is not quite so common. And that actually takes us to our first article that I want to feature. It's Too Big to Fail or Too Big to Succeed. This is by Blue. And he basically just kind of rants a little bit about the big banks and how we were tricked and told that, you know, they're too big to fail. Our lives are going to be changed forever. Well, he proposes the idea of the free market, essentially. Too big to succeed. They all fail. And what springs up in its place? But small business owners. People that come to the table, they bring something that changes things, that makes things better. So go comment on that, and I'd like to read those comments, actually, kind of what your strategy is or what your thoughts are on that. And the next article I actually want to touch on is called Licensed to Live, and this is actually by Iron Eagle. And it basically says, did you notice there's a license for this, there's a permit for that, there's a certificate you have to achieve for that. She kind of touches on the idea that, you know, half these things you can just simply be an apprentice, like, you know, plumbing or welding or, shoot, even being a doctor, I guess. They all have to be apprentices. So she actually does talk about the only license that kind of makes sense are for the public health. But then there's that line, that gray zone. So go and read that article, License to Live, in the economics section. So this actually kind of, I started it out a little different, but the very end of this last segment, I wanted to touch on the mission in the Dating Freedom Lovers group. I'm really excited because February 14th is coming up, so everyone's looking for love. The Patriots, you know, you don't want to be lonely. Nobody likes to be lonely. And, well, anyways, it's really hard, especially when you're awake, to find somebody that you can talk to and connect to about certain ideas. So it actually takes us to the Dating Freedom Lovers group. And check it out. This is actually Daphne. She was part of our initial Planet InfoWars launch. So I figured it's fitting that I put her on this update. But basically, send us your picture. It'll go where her, you know, where her picture is and your name. And try to keep it under 150 characters if you can, because there's only so much room. So she just kind of gave a quick description. This is what I'm looking for. This is who I am. And then contact her. So make sure that when you do the mission, send us your username, which is the @DiscoDaphne for her. And just send your picture, quick little details, and your username to mods, M-O-D-S, _love@InfoWars.com. And we'll take a look at it. We'll put it together. And we'll hopefully get to change them out every day, maybe even a couple of times a day if we get enough of them. So far, really good response. Thank you guys for sending them in. And I love it. I absolutely love it. It's making me really happy to see all these people, like, excited about who they are and excited about who they want to meet. And so I look forward to those. Patriots, keep on talking, because we're listening.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals. But the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com. Sign up as a distributor and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com.
Well, we've got one of our favorite guests, Gerald Celente, beginning of the year, and we want to know what kind of trends he sees with his Trends Journal. Gerald, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, David.
What'd you think about that coronation yesterday?
Well, that's what it was. It was nobility. What a disgrace that this is going on in the United States. You know, my motto, by the way, is taught to me by my dear father, may his soul rest in peace. Anytime I'd be shooting my mouth off, he'd look at me and he'd say in Italian, Papagallo, parrot, think for yourself. Stop repeating what everybody else is saying.
Right.
So what I have to say is only the way I see it. I'm not telling people what to believe. But what I saw was disgusting to me. Here they put on this lavish affair, bragging about all the designer clothes, rolling out the red carpets. The Clintons showing up as though they're coming out of their jumbo jet, and it's a chariot out of the past for the nobility, and people are starving in the streets. The peasants could hardly make ends meet. The people are unemployed, being thrown out of their homes, and putting on a lavish spectacle like this is really rubbing it in the face. To me, it wasn't an inauguration. It wasn't even a coronation. It was off with their heads 2.0. It was so insensitive.
Yeah.
It was so out of character. It was so contrived. Hey, even Beyonce was lip syncing, right?
That's right.
And the band is pretending that they're playing music. The whole thing is a hoax.
That's right. Yeah. $100 million, wasn't it? Didn't they say it was $100 million?
Whatever it was, you know. And of course, where did the money come from?
Right, right. Yeah, and at the same time, he's just, everybody got their first paychecks of the year. Everybody that's working got their first paycheck of the year. The working poor see their taxes go up by 48% on Social Security. You know, everybody, these are people making under $113,000 when he said he wasn't going to raise taxes on anybody unless they made over $250,000. I mean, he's taken these people who wanted a class warfare, and he's given them class warfare, but they didn't realize what class he saw himself a part of. As you mentioned, you know, he's the royal class.
Yeah, well, look at this scene. Look at this pedestal that they built for him and Michelle to dance on and making a big deal out of it. And just for the record, man, I watched it, The Cat Can't Boogie.
That's right. And you know something about that, don't you?
Oh, yeah, you know.
We got some
boogie in your bones, you know. You can't fake it.
That's right. We got some good clips of you dancing with that. I wanted to talk to you about this thing that just recently happened with Germany repatriating gold. What do you think about that? I mean, Obama doesn't want to talk about what's going on financially. He'd rather have his coronation parties and his $10 million Hawaiian vacation and go after our guns because he doesn't really want to talk about what's going on financially. But do you see that as a pretty significant event?
Well, absolutely. There's nothing mentioned about the unemployed in his whole speech. There's nothing really mentioned about other than him saying we're on the road to recovery. You know, that's
right.
Just jive talk.
Right.
So there's really nothing of substance. And when you look what happened, David, with what's going on in Germany, there's a lot to this story. The Germans, I mean, you know, check it out, man. If, you know, I'm not really, you know, I'm not suffering from ADD, but it doesn't take a lot to remember. Hey, weren't the English and the French and the Americans fighting the Germans in World War II? Why would the Germans give the French, the Americans, and the English, all of their gold to hold? That's the story.
Mm-hmm.
So now what they're doing is because of a going-ons over there in Germany. As a matter of fact, I was in Munich recently when it just started to hit the fan. They want their gold back. And much of the gold is in the Federal Reserve in America, in the Bank of France, and in Banks of England. So now they want it back. So here's the deal. They're not going to get all of it back until 2020. I mean, what's the story? What, are they carrying this over one bar at a time? You know? I mean, what's the big deal here?
Right.
And then the other issue is, when you really look at the numbers, it's about 122 billion euros worth of gold. Guess what? That's chump change.
Mm-hmm.
In a German economy and a global economy whose currencies are ostensibly have some thing behind them other than hot air. So the fact, as I believe it, is that number one, the gold isn't there. Number two, if it is there, something's going on and they're not getting it back. Because let's face it, I mean, what kind of imbecile would say it's going to take 7 years to carry this stuff back and forth? I mean, what are they going to do? Put it in Angela Merkel's pockets and bring it back every time she comes to Washington?
That's right.
I mean, who's making this baloney up?
Right, right.
So the other factor is, then you look at the report that here's something as a trend tracking tip. And I've been doing this for over 30 years. And one of the things that you learn, David, is every time when the government comes out with information they're required to put out, they usually do it on a Friday afternoon. That's when all the people leave the bureaus. Mm-hmm. And Saturday is the least read news day of the week, by far. So what's the report that just came out? I'd like to read you this headline, because most people don't know this. It goes back to the gold and what a whole sham this thing is. Oh, and by the way, does this sound like a conspiracy theory? Figure this one out. How about those five lovely letters, LIBOR? Yeah, mm-hmm. You remember the interest rate scandal. The right. Banks were rigging the interest rates. Period, paragraph, it's a fact. It's no conspiracy theory. And neither is this. Fed red-faced as notes reveal officials fail to grasp dangers of 2007 crises. This is from the Financial Times. This came out on the weekend when very few people were following the news. In the toilet paper record, the New York Times, they buried it back in the news section with some white shoe boy language that would never tip off what really went on. And you had to read well into the story to see the sham, the stupidity, the ineptness, and the arrogance of the guys running the show. I'm pointing this out not to say that we were right and they were wrong, more so that the same jerks that didn't see it coming, the same imbeciles who wouldn't admit it when it was in front of them, are the same people that are now making the decisions. They continue to fail their way up to the top. Here's what it says. Top officials at the U.S. Federal Reserve took months to realize that the 2007 financial crisis would rock the world's largest economy, according to embarrassing meeting transcripts released yesterday. Now, here's the other in this. What, you know, it's great. I love that America fights around the world to bring freedom and democracy. Freedom and democracy, they hold on to this stuff for 5 years. And you know why they hold on to it? So they could keep rigging the game.
Right.
And so they could keep covering up their mistakes. And so because we the people are too damn stupid and too undeserving to have the information. Here it goes. The transcripts reveal that Fed policymakers viewed the crisis, which erupted in August 2007 on the back of problems in the mortgage for subprime mortgage loans, as good news because markets were pricing more risk. It goes on and on. They didn't have a clue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So now you mentioned about this gold transfer. You said it's chump change, but I guess one of the things that got people's attention is this is the largest transfer. This will be the largest transfer that they've ever done. And the only countries prior to this that have repatriated anything are Iran, Venezuela, Libya. So this is the first time a Western government has done it. And it's been because of public pressure, right? That people are pressuring them to get the gold back. So, I mean, what do you think that they're doing? Are they just bowing to public pressure? What's going on with the gold transfer? And how do you think that's going to affect gold prices? I mean, they've gone up, but is it going to send it up even higher, you think?
To answer your questions, first of all, you pointed out the three countries prior to Germany. Venezuela, they write Chavez off as some maniac.
Right, right.
Libya. What was that guy's name that they killed?
Gaddafi, yeah.
Yeah, and right. Who do they have sanctions against?
Yeah, that's right.
Iran?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Do you get it?
Right.
Yeah, this is only a show. Because, here, read the news. They're debasing the currencies worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As they debase the currencies, the only thing that's going to be worth anything are objects of value, whether they're diamonds, whether they're silver or platinum, nickel, silver, any gold, of course, that has value. Again, look at the news.
Mm-hmm.
The new prime minister of Japan, Abe, first thing he's doing is he's pressuring the Bank of Japan to print more worthless money. Listen to the words of Mervyn King, the outgoing head of the Bank of England. There's a currency war. That's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Abe said the same thing. So too has Guido Mantega, the finance minister of Brazil. Pick up today's Financial Times. Read about how the Europeans are now unloading on the Japanese for the currency war. It's something we've seen this story before.
Mm-hmm.
It's the panic of 08, depression, currency wars, trade wars, world war, the crash of 29, the Great Depression, currency wars, world war, trade wars, world war.
Right.
You listen, you go back, read history. You see what was going on in Japan. They flooded the market with cheap money under their prime minister and their finance guy. As a matter of fact, the army ended up assassinating him because he wouldn't keep dumping more money into the military. You go back to the 1930s, the trade wars were going on. They're heating up now. The reason it's a big deal about Germany repatriating their gold is because it shows that that is the only thing of value in this whole Ponzi scheme.
Exactly, exactly. And we've seen it shoot up a little bit, but it's still well under $1,700 an ounce, I think, right? Isn't it?
Again, yeah. I believe, and this is, yes, it's a little under, I believe the game is rigged.
Mm-hmm,
every
mm-hmm.
day, virtually, you pick up the papers, listen to the news, read about the insider trading scandals. I mentioned the LIBOR. You can't get bigger than rigging the LIBOR.
Right.
You're
right.
Talking about, you know, hundreds of trillions of dollars
mm-hmm.
in loans, in mortgages, in fixing the interest rates. And it's not a conspiracy theory. It's a fact. They have the emails that went to Timothy Geithner when he was president of the New York Fed. They have the emails that went into the Bank of England. It's fact.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're rigging that, you think they're rigging gold? Because when gold prices skyrocket, people will be bailing out of these worthless currencies and panic is underway.
Absolutely. And the Forbes article, they quoted the Germans as saying they're concerned about a currency crisis. So you see this as part of a currency bubble that's about to hit, as well as you mentioned war, right? It's that's going to go hand in hand with that. That's one of your top trends coming up in Trends Journal, isn't it? Is war?
Yeah, unfortunately,
yeah.
And it's going on.
And you've got four steps to getting peace that you've got in there. Tell us a little bit about that.
The four steps to peace?
Yeah.
Well, the four steps to peace are very easy. You hear these little chicken hawks over there. Cameron, Obama, Hollande. How about Hollandaise? You know, you see this guy, you know, that's about the only thing he could whip. So all of these people that want to take out somebody, I hear Assad has to go. You know, Ahmadinejad has to go. All right, take him out. Look, if you call him out, you take him out. You pick a fight, fight the fight. I watched Alex Jones on Piers Morgan. He said to him, I'll put on a robe. We'll go a couple of rounds. Mine will be an American flag. You put the Union Jack on.
Mm-hmm.
Alex didn't say, hey, Salenti, go fight my fight for me.
Right.
So why are these guys who have these big mouths and no cojones start fights and then send other people to go do their dirty work. So let's go back to the good old days. Alexander the Great, William the Conqueror. Hey, how about George Washington, Napoleon? The guys started the fight, they fought the fight. So what I suggest, rule number one, Gerald Celente's first rule of war. What we do is we rent out the Arena di Verona, the splendidly restored Roman amphitheater, and we put on a pay-per-view world leader takedown, fight to the finish.
I pay to see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, they did it before. Keep us out of your psycho trip.
Mm-hmm.
Rule number two. If you're for the war, you fight the war. And if you're too infirm or for whatever reason you can't fight the war, you pay for the war. You want the war, you send your kids, send your wife, send yourself, send your money. Keep me out of your psycho trip. Rule number three, the golden rule. Look what just happened over there in Mali. All of a sudden, the French decide they're going to invade. The people in Mali said, hey, you invaded, there's going to be payback. Read the Christian Science Monitor the day after France struck. Those were the words. There's going to be payback.
Mm-hmm.
There was payback. And as we say in the Bronx, payback's a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
So now they paid back with the Algerian crisis. They said it. This is payback. So what do they say now? Oh, these terrorists, these crazy people. No, the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Don't call them names. Call it getting even. Rule number four. Rule number four is let the people vote. You want to go to war? I remember that wonderful humanitarian mission by Obama. Cat hits the stage saying we're going to launch a humanitarian mission. And what does he do? Boop, he's on the plane to Rio with his wife, his mother-in-law, and his kids. I saw it with Bush. We got to take out Saddam Hussein. He has weapons of mass destruction. And a gang of 535. 535 flunkies, politicians, congressmen, senators that are only in power because they get money from special interests and serve the powerful, voting for us mm-hmm. to decide whether you, me, or anybody else should go to war. The burden of the war falls on the people's shoulders. If you want to go to war, let the people vote. I don't need somebody to vote for me to tell me what I should do. These are not representatives of me. They only represent the people with the most power, the most money, and the most interests. Okay. Those are my four rules of peace.
That's right. They've even moved away from the 535. They've moved back to, you saw Panetta telling Jeff Sessions, we don't need your authority to go to war. We're just going to, we might tell you what we're going to do, but we're going to talk to the United Nations. We're going to talk to NATO, and then we're going to make that decision, and we might inform Congress what we're going to do. I mean, they've moved us dramatically in the other direction, haven't they?
Yeah, and they're a bunch of losers. That's the other thing. Mm-hmm. Hey, they did a great job in Vietnam, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, more firepower. We only killed 3 million and destroyed the country with Agent Orange. If only you would have let us loose more. And we only killed 60,000 of our troops, wounded a couple of 100,000 more, and a couple of 100,000 more for life. I got a better one. Let's go into Afghanistan. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alexander the Great couldn't pull it off. The English couldn't do it. The Russians couldn't do it. But we'll do it. Hey, remember that guy? What was his name? Stanley McChrystal Meth. What was it? Now yeah. He's teaching leadership at Yale or something.
Right.
Can you imagine what a BS course? Imagine spending money to hear this guy shoot his mouth off leadership. Remember his impressive progress? Remember that other guy, Petraeus? You remember him.
Oh, yeah.
The guy that got caught with some chick. You know, Remember him? He was a general over there
right.
with the impressive progress in Afghanistan. Oh, how about Iraq? Yeah, weapons of mass destruction, ties to Al-Qaeda. Look at the beauty of that one. $1 trillion down the drain, 5,000 of our people dead, suicide rates among the troops going off the charts. Oh, one more. We only killed 1 million people.
Yeah.
So not, they're losers.
Yeah,
and listen to this loser talk. This is Cameron, that little weenie over there,
right.
That little Eton Oxford boy. This guy, you know what he does? He plays against a tennis machine. That's his biggest fight.
The UK Prime Minister, right.
Yeah. This is a global threat. It will require, talking about Mali, a global response. It will require a response that is about years, even decades, rather than months. Now, here's the best part. Quote, it requires a response that is patient and painstaking, that is tough, but also intelligent, but above all, has an absolutely iron resolve, and that is what we will deliver over these coming years. I love that English limey lingo. Iron resolve. I got a piece of iron resolve for you. Painstaking, intelligent. They're not talking about you.
How could that little country, how could that little country be a global threat? Most people can't even find it on the map, just like they couldn't find the Gulf of Tonkin on the map when they used that as a tool. I think one of the most powerful movies I've seen lately was The Fog of War. I don't know if you saw that or not, where it was an extended interview with McNamara, and he was talking about how Gulf of Tonkin was a false flag event. And then he talked about how years and years after the war, he went back and met with Vietnamese leaders. And he said, the North Vietnamese leader got up and said, why did you do what you did? And McNamara said, it was because of the domino theory. And the guy was furious, pounded the table. He said, you fool. You killed all these people. He said, there was no domino theory. He says, don't you know anything about history? For 1,000 years, we fought the Chinese for our independence, and we fought you because you were there for our independence. And McNamara told this story after the fact. So yeah, Mali is another one. Mali is another one of these deals.
Yeah, check this one out. This is a great one, too. Matter of fact, I wrote about McNamara's lies in my book, Trends 2000, back in 1996, about how he knew that the war was a losing war. And because the psychopath, like the rest of them out there, he should have been hung for knowing this and prosecuting it. He should have been prosecuted. Here's another beautiful quote about Mali. Yeah, I mean, this stuff is, you can't believe this stuff. Angela Merkel stated Wednesday that, quote, terrorism in Mali was a threat to Europe and to Germany. Oh, yeah, then Mali is on the loose, man. They're going to get on a camel before you know it. You know, woof, they're going to be in Germany. Yeah, going right down, you know, they'll be right in the heart of Berlin before you know it.
Mm-hmm. Well, all these wars are going to keep the public's eye off of the currency crisis, keep their eye off what the central banks are doing, keep their eye off all of this economic meltdown, which is what Obama's doing here at home with the attack on the Second Amendment, attack on gun owners. He doesn't want to do anything to address any fiscal things. Just like the first term, he completely avoided it and focused on his health care agenda. Now he's got to have some other boogeyman to slay.
Well, you nailed it. You read his speech yesterday. What does he say right in the beginning? He says it right there. Let me pull it up here a second. He said, right, you know, he said to the effect that the United States was going to be doing its policing around the world. And that's exactly what they're doing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. America will remain the anchor of strong alliances in every corner of the globe. Oh, before that, he was talking about the founding fathers. Yeah, right up their alley, you know. Yeah, and we will renew those institutions that extend our capacity to manage crises abroad. Manage crises abroad? How about managing the one over here?
Right.
Well, maybe you're talking about the broad Petraeus was talking about, because I don't know what abroad you're talking about. Because you can't manage anything. You started a losing war in Libya. There's a civil war there now. They're destabilizing Syria. Now they're going into Mali. Oh, That couldn't be because of AFRICOM. You know that one. Mm-hmm. The United States sending troops into 35 countries in North Africa, throughout Africa. Couldn't be because the Chinese are ripping off all the minerals and resources and they want their share, could it?
Right, right.
So when you read the language of Obama's inauguration speech, it's right here in black and white, and he says that for no one has a greater stake in a peaceful world than the most powerful nation. Colonialism, imperialism,
yes.
Stay out of their business.
Absolutely. And I think it's pretty clear, too. He didn't talk about solving a crisis. He talked about managing it, right? They don't want to solve it. They want to keep it going. They want to keep it perpetual.
Again, you nailed it. They're doing the same thing with this guy Hollande over there in France. They're getting the people's minds off the economic problems.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They're doing the same thing in the UK. You read the data coming out of Germany, it's going down over there as well. It goes back to the repatriation of the gold. The only reason that these economies are standing up to any levels at all is because of the record low interest rates. I just got a commercial loan to buy one of the most historic buildings in Colonial Kingston at 3.25%.
Mm-hmm.
And they covered closing costs. And it's locked in for 20 years.
Yeah.
The only reason this economies are turning around is because they're flooding the markets with cheap dough. And at some point, these interest rates are going to go back up. The bond markets are going to explode, and the economy is going to crash much worse than it did before. And if you don't believe me, listen to the Federal Reserve cats, man.
Right, right.
They do.
Right, yeah. While the stock market is doing well and while interest rates are low, with all these new regulations of the Obamacare, the people who are the working poor, they're going to have to, you know, they're getting laid off. They're getting their hours reduced to under 30 because anything over 30 is now full-time jobs. So a lot of these people who are trying to make ends meet at the very bottom are going to have to juggle two part-time jobs, try to get their schedules worked out through that sort of thing. They're seeing their Social Security taxes going up. But a lot of these people are the same people who voted for Obama because they thought he was going to punish the rich. Is it?
Oh, I know. I mean, you read the headline of today's paper. I don't have it in front of me. The New York Times. Maybe this is it. Let me see. No, they had something along the headline of how Obama's talk, inauguration, was a liberal message. I'm saying to myself, a liberal message? They just killed 13 people in Yemen with a drone.
Right, right.
You know, we have warrantless wiretapping. Mm-hmm. The National Defense Authorization Act. What, he just signed another one recently that allows them to spy on us forever for no reason at all.
Right,
liberal,
and store, you know, it in the Utah data center that they're going to open up this year. That giant center in Utah, they're going to store everything there that they're spying on us illegally about.
Yeah, was that the NSA one? Or?
Yeah, the one in Utah is a multi-billion dollar center. It's got, it's got yottabytes of storage. I had to look that up. That's a trillion terabytes, a yottabyte. I had to come up with a new prefix for that.
Yeah, so you're 100% correct, David. The liberals lie. You show them one after another how Obama is everything that they say they hate, and they keep supporting them. And they're not alone. You look at the polling data that came out recently. What is Congress's approval rating, like 9%?
Right.
And yet, what, 94% of the incumbents got reelected, and well over 50% of the people turned out to vote.
Yeah.
So the people are also getting what they deserve. And then there's the whole other group of people. You hit them, and everybody, especially Alex Jones listeners, know this. You start talking to friends and family about the facts, what's going on, and I don't want to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
You know, you're too negative. You're a gloom and doomer.
That's right.
That upsets me. If it upsets me, I don't want to hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going on as well.
Yeah, this weekend we were at a rally here at the state capitol for the Second Amendment. And that's what I was told by somebody who just woke up. He said, hey, it was really scary. Because, and my first reaction is to run away from this bad news. But it doesn't make the bad news go away if you run away from it, right? You got to face it and try to find some way that you're going to survive through it, some way to try to rectify it. But that, you're right. That's what people say. They don't want to hear the bad news. They reject it because it's not a happy scenario. And they're getting offered happy scenarios on television all the time. They want to believe in a happy ever after.
Yeah. And the other part of it is as well, as like you said, you know, to wake up to it and realize that you believed in a lie all your life. You know, it's like believing in a religion and all of a sudden you don't believe in it anymore. And that's what these are. These are political religions.
That's right.
I see it. You know, I mean, I've almost gotten in a fight with a guy one time. I said something that he didn't like. Don't you talk about my president like that. And I went off on this guy. Who are you talking to? I said whatever I damn well please.
Right.
Absolutely. But, you know, this is a religion and I'm a political atheist. Mm-hmm. So I don't believe in political religions and I certainly would not bow to a political god. You know, that's not them. That's beneath me. But the other point of this is, and as we go through the top trends of 2013 that we have in the New Trends Journal, which, by the way, is 60 pages advertising free of information about what's going on in the world, like covered nowhere else, and money back guarantee if you could find better or you don't like it. And the other issue is preparing you for the world tomorrow. There's another positive trend in there, and that is the Great Awakening 2.0. There was a Great Awakening in America prior to the American Revolution. At first, it was a religious revival. People realizing, the people that believed in salvation, they finally understood that if you're going to achieve salvation, it's not because you're following the dictates of a church or a hierarchy. It's about how you live your life. Mm-hmm. And it's not about the religion that you live. It's about how you live. Mm-hmm. That was the first part of it. The second part of the Great Awakening was to the awakening that there is no nobility out there, that King George III is just another average or below average guy. And when you read the letters going back and forth between Jefferson or Franklin and the people going overseas talking about the royalty, what a disgrace these people were. Mm-hmm. The people woke up to that. Well, David, we have the same kind of nobility. Again, look at that shot of the Clintons walking out of their jumbo jet with all of the gold and red trappings around them.
Absolutely.
And all the paparazzi. Mm-hmm. And look at all of this grandeur for the coronation. The people are waking up. These are not nobility. Matter of fact, they're the same people you couldn't stand in high school and college that wanted to be class president and head of the student council. The suck-ups, the brown noses, glad-handers. The insincere and the overly ambitious.
Yeah.
So we're seeing the beginning of a great awakening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was at the early days of our republic, ambition was considered to be a severe character flaw when it came to politicians. Today it seems to be a prerequisite, isn't it?
They brag about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What, are there any other trends that you see besides war and a great awakening that...
Yeah, there are some very positive ones. And again, you know, I look at things to the way they are, not the way I want them to be as a political atheist. You look at how young people, you go back to Christmas sales. Tablets are outselling toys for kids. Hmm. Little kids are growing up now and they're infants and they're playing with this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Their brains are being wired differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, figuratively, of course.
I actually saw let me just interject here. I actually saw a YouTube video where they handed a little 2-year-old kid a book. And the 2-year-old kid is trying to do these pitch and zoom gestures, you know, from the iPad on the book. It was kind of funny, but you're talking about people having their brains wired differently. That just shows, you know, this is obviously the first time this young child had their hands on a book. You know, they've grown up totally in this virtual world.
Exactly. So now the education system has to adjust to it. Our education system is a total failure. I say that with true confidence in the sense that by their deeds you shall know them. We spend more on education than virtually any other nation in the OECD. Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development System. Yet, look at the failure of this nation. If our education system worked, do you think we'd be in the trouble we're in? So the system is designed for the industrial age. Mm-hmm. A new system is being born, and it hasn't been developed yet. I'm mentioning this, and we talk more about it in the Trends Journal, because the people that are looking for opportunities in the future to find professions and investment opportunities start looking in New Millennium Education. Because a whole new learning system is going to take place. This thing is going to change radically. In 50 years, our education system will look nothing like it is today. To the extent that when you go back to the beginning of the industrial age, and you had all of these people in factories, then they got started getting replaced by machines. Then they got started replaced by robots. The same thing is going to happen with teachers. Mm-hmm. You're not going to need all these teachers. The whole system is going to change. So this is a huge trend. We're one of the few people, I don't know of anyone, actually I wrote about Interactive U, again back in Trends 2000, in 1996. Mm-hmm. When, you know, the computer age really didn't begin until around 92, 94. And it really hasn't gotten there yet. Trends are born, they grow, they mature, reach old age, and die. Mm-hmm. This trend has just been born for New Millennium Education. Another big trend that we write about. You know, I coined the term in 93, clean foods. These are foods that were only organic and chemical free, but brought to market in the best of sanitary conditions.
Right.
Now we're looking at a big trend is going to be safe foods. Mm-hmm. Because the whole game has changed. You look at the drought conditions going on in the states. And it's not only the states. What, they can't bring barges down the Mississippi. They're having problems because the water table is so low. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a shortage of safe foods. Foods that are not genetically modified.
Right, that's
foods
key.
Foods that aren't pesticide-laden and chemically treated.
Mm-hmm.
Micro farms are going to grow and expand. City centers growing more foods, particularly in these dilapidated downtown areas, are going to be reborn with a new homesteading.
Kind of a locavore movement, locally produced, locally consumed food, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, you're all what you eat. I mean, mm-hmm. let's face it, you eat a lot of crap, drink a lot of crap, you're going to look like crap. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's the same thing, you take in junk news, read junk information, listen to junk entertainment, your soul and your heart experiences junk emotions. So this whole new safe food trend is going to be huge. And also along with it, a new homesteading trend. Because you have a lot of areas around the country that are dilapidated, and a lot of young people, another one of our trends, I call it Generation F'd. They call it the millennial generation. These are kids that, you know, born between 1980 and 2000, mm-hmm. that have university degrees in worthlessness. Mm-hmm. They have jobs that don't pay them a living wage if they have a job at all. And they're educated. Mm-hmm. And they know that the future is going to be what they make it. And right. that's part of the Great Awakening. So there are a lot of positive things in this Trends Journal as well.
Well, that's really fascinating. Like you said, it's what, 60, 70 pages? No commercials? Right.
60 pages, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff there. That's really fascinating. And when you're talking about the education thing, I think that's really key. I think, I've homeschooled my sons, all the way through from the start to finish. And it's not just a question of what they know and how they can work in the world, but it's also their attitude. You know, government has used schools, and it's been designed to use schools to control the population the way they think. It's a major brainwashing operation. So once that starts to move away and starts to get decentralized, and people start taking a more active control of their children's education, I think that's going to be really energizing the Great Awakening, as you put it. Well, thank you
Absolutely.
Very much. Thank you very much, Gerald Celente. Look forward to seeing. I want to read the rest of this Trends Journal here. You've got me really interested. Thanks for talking to us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on, David.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Well, I want to read the rest of the trends that he's got projected for 2013. And if you want to read those, you can get it at trendsjournal.com. That's where you can order General Salinity's Trends Journal. We'll be right back after the break with David Zuniga and someone who has a organization called America Again.
While we fight to retain our liberty, while we fight to expose globalism, we have to realize we're talking about a very powerful combination of power.
Renowned author and expert Joel Scalzo breaks down the globalist plan to shut down America and stage a new world war.
In one day, America will go from day to night. And if you haven't prepared in advance, there's not enough time to prepare in 24 hours, even if you saw it that early.
Coming to the InfoWar in November is our new documentary film presentation.
Strategic relocation is a systematic way to think strategically in the future about how do I safeguard.
Joel Scalzo, Strategic Relocation.
The freeways are going to be crowded. They're going to run out of gasoline. They're going to run out of food. And then they're going to start to go north and south of those freeways.
Joel Scalzo is renowned as one of the world's foremost experts in strategic relocation and the securing of your home.
We talk about natural disasters, the health environment. We talk about pollution, the water quality. My personal experience about being in every one of these states.
Government is digging in for the organized, incremental collapse of society and world war.
The U.S. isn't building huge underground bases and bunkers because of some terrorist threat. They know that a massive nuclear attack is coming. They want that attack to come. Most people won't even be ready and won't be able to get out of town when any of these nuclear weapons fall, because there'll be absolute panic.
There is no preparedness without strategy.
What I tell people is that you do have time. Prepare wisely in advance.
This Christmas, give the gift of preparedness. Strategic Relocation, the film, with Joel Scalzo and Alex Jones. Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals, but the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com, sign up as a distributor, and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com.
Well, you know by now that Obama's done his executive orders, and we've got sheriffs that we've talked to who are standing on the Constitution, by the Constitution. We've got Sheriff Mack with a constitutional sheriff's organization. They're going to protect and defend the Constitution, as are the Oath Keepers that Stuart Rhodes has. But the question is, what, if anything, can we do to go on the offensive legally and peacefully? So we have somebody here today, David Zuniga, author and founder of America Again. Welcome, David.
Thanks, David. Good to be here.
Tell us a little bit about what you've got in mind, you know, about going on the offensive.
We'll do that. This is it. 220 years ago, we got this weapon, and the U.S. Constitution is and always has been the most powerful offensive weapon we've had in our arsenal. This is worth 200 million AR-15s, really. Mm-hmm. So this is our weapon, and I'll show you how we're going to use this.
And you've got a little bit different take on the way to defend the Second Amendment,
from the
Constitution as well. Tell us a little bit about that.
Let's talk about the Second Amendment situation that's going on here. Before talking about a solution, we have to look at how are the American people handling these constant attacks on us from the government. Mm-hmm. How are we handling? Do we know who we are? Do we know what this document says? We, the people, are over this document. We created this document, so we're over it. It does not control us. It controls and limits the government that we created in this document. Mm-hmm. Okay? So that, and I know you know this, mm-hmm. but the people need to understand this is very powerful. We have never enforced it, not once.
Right, and the Bill of Rights was set up to, they were concerned, if you look at the preamble to the Bill of Rights, they were concerned that people didn't realize that the Constitution was something that was constraining the central government and gave it limits, and so they came up with an additional 10 amendments to clarify individual rights some rights that were retained by the states.
So I want to go into some stories that you've done, that InfoWars has been doing, and the way the American people have been looking at this gun grab, this latest gun grab, because it's a perfect way to show how we don't grasp what we have here. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. So let's, and let me just say, the people are the top sovereigns over government in America. There's nothing higher. We are over the Constitution. The Constitution is over our governments. Mm-hmm. Federal, state, county, city. Okay? Mm-hmm. So we're the most powerful, we are the most powerful force in America. Okay. So that's number one. And we have to understand that if the government is doing something illegal, it's our fault. We have not enforced this document. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you look at the latest gun grab, you remember you did a deal of a piece sometime back on Cass Sunstein saying, and this is a ridiculous
we've got it up there now.
Point, but Sunstein, one of Obama's czars, was saying that after Heller, the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in Heller, D.C. versus Heller, 2008, he said, well, this is the first time that the people have been given the right to keep and bear arms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With Heller in 2008.
Right.
Now, let's see how asinine that is. Okay, number one, the right to keep and bear arms is granted by God. The Constitution only reiterates that grant by God for humans to defend themselves. So Sunstein mm-hmm. was wrong on that count. Now, he might have been right on this, and here's how I would have twisted, here's how I would have nuanced what he said. The District of Columbia is a 10-by-10-mile empire. Go to Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution. It says Congress has the exclusive jurisdiction and rule over that mm-hmm. District of Columbia. Mm-hmm. It's not like the states. So the people that live in D.C. don't have the rights that you and I have in the 50 states. Mm-hmm. So maybe Cass Sunstein, he might have been right. Heller brought to the people of the District of Columbia, possibly, the first right to keep and bear arms. Maybe so. I don't know what Congress was running before that. Mm-hmm. I know they're running prostitution, theft, every other racket right now in that 10-mile square.
Right.
Okay, so that's one thing. When Sunstein came up with that, everybody went crazy. I don't think it was so crazy, and I'm not worried about that. The second thing is you ran, let's look at something else. I'm going to show the Internal Revenue Code. This is the code in single volume. In Section 7608 of the Internal Revenue Code, Item A1 says that the enforcement of Subtitle E and other laws pertaining to liquor, tobacco, and firearms, in that case, Subtitle E, the IRS agent can carry firearms, mm-hmm. only in that case. Mm-hmm. Now let's break down what this means. It means that in every other case of IRS enforcement, when you see these IRS SWAT teams out there with guns, mm-hmm. they're committing federal firearms violations. Why isn't the gun lobby saying anything about this? They are committing federal fire. Look, only Subtitle E, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. When they break into these offices or these homes, IRS agents armed, these are felonies.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, so it's not even that. It's that the Department of Education is has shotguns, and that was questioned back in the summer of 2010. And the Washington Post said, why are they putting out an RFP for shotguns and bulletproof vests? And then a year later, they had a SWAT team raid of a family, drug them out in the middle of the night, handcuffed them on the front lawn because the mother, who was no longer with the family, had delinquent loans.
She had a delinquent school loan or something.
Yeah. Delinquent education.
It's crazy. Right, yeah. But these are violations of the highest law by the federal government. We need to enforce it. We're not enforcing it. So now, why does the IRS have a subtitle E dealing with firearms? Think about this now. That is an infringement. That right there is illegal. There should be no alcohol, tobacco, and firearms.
Right.
Subtitle E. So anyway, this is just one of the things that we've put up with this for 20, 30, 40 years. Why do we allow this? It's an infringement on our right. So I've never heard any gun groups talking about this. You know, why don't we start going after this?
They're probably concerned about audits. get their tax exempt.
Well, now I'm going to go one step deeper with you here. Do you remember when Obama talked about, I think it was 2010, you ran an article that Obama said that AK-47s are not for the people. They're for the military.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and we hear that all the time. McChrystal is going on CNN talking about particular rifle and bullets and going into detail about the muzzle velocity of it and saying,
exactly,
citizens don't need that. Citizens, and you hear, you don't need that to hunt deer and that
military.
Sort of thing. Right. Exactly.
David, you remember some time back you ran an article, InfoWars ran an article on Obama saying that AK-47s had no business being in the hands of citizens.
Right.
Remember that article?
Right.
And that assault weapons were for the military.
And you hear that all the time. I've heard McChrystal making the rounds of CNN and Fox News with Hannity, pumping his book and talking about the details about how fast these bullets travel and saying, you don't need this to hunt deer and that sort of thing.
Or you don't need this magazine size, or you don't need any kind of weapon.
Mm-hmm.
We have it all wrong, including the gun lobby. We have it all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the deal. We're going to go into the Constitution for a minute. You know, when you say that a machine gun or a selective fire weapon or whatever is only for the military, first you have to say, what is the military? Look at the Constitution. What is the military? Let's see how it's defined. Okay? Article 1, Section 8, Clause 12. Now, Clauses 12 through 16 of Article 1, Section 8 are the only places that military is discussed in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
In Clause 12, it says Congress has the power to raise and support armies, but they may not raise money for this purpose for more than 2 years at a time. No such thing as a standing army. Full-time army is illegal. Full-time Marines is illegal. No boots on the ground except yours and mine.
Mm-hmm.
This is, we are supposed to defend ourselves. Now,
and that's a key thing, too, because when you look at the Gulf War, they said, you know, they had total air superiority. They came in, they wiped everybody out. But they said, you know, we have to have boots on the ground. You have to have boots on the ground in order to occupy the country.
In order to occupy or control a country.
Exactly. Near. And what happens is, a standing army, those boots on the ground eventually end up on your throat.
Exactly. It's the wrong boots. That's right. So who is the military? We are the military, you and I, the armed militia. Let's go through the rest of this. Clause 13 says that we're giving Congress the power to provide and maintain a Navy. Now it says provide and maintain a Navy. That means full time.
Mm-hmm.
Back then they wanted the only foreign borders we had, or the only attack fronts we had, were the seas. So we wanted a full time Navy. That's fine. The Navy is kosher. Now, it says in Clause 14, to make rules that govern and regulate the land and naval forces. The Congress can make the rules of engagement, the Congress can make the training rules, etc. But they don't put up the armies.
Mm-hmm.
We do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and exactly, going back to the Navy thing, today, with modern weapons and so on, that would include an Air Force.
That would include an Air Force.
An air defense. Basically isolate us, right?
Isolate us.
But not occupy us.
Right.
Like a standing army.
In other words, the Air Force, they didn't have Air Force in those days, obviously, no aircraft, but the Air Force is the same spirit of that law. to defend us with a shield. Same way with space-based weapons, I would say fine. Same thing with the Coast Guard, I would say fine. Mm-hmm. But boots on the ground, Army and Marines are illegal, according to the Constitution. Let's finish this. It says here in Clause 15, to provide for calling upon who? The militia. To do three things. To enforce the laws of the Union, to put down rebellions, and to repel invasions. Mm-hmm. Now let's look at put down rebellions. Rebellions by who? Would it be us? No, because we're called to put them down.
Right.
There's no such thing as a people's rebellion if the militia is the one supposed to put it down and we're the people. In other words, we are self-policing, self-defending, self-enforcing people, the only people on earth that can say that by law. Mm-hmm. We are the military. Mm-hmm. So,
and we have the founders saying, can we not be trusted with weapons for our own defense? That doesn't just mean your own personal defense at the shopping center,
right,
or your family's
or
defense
your home,
at your home.
Your car, that's
but it's
right.
it's weapons for our own defense.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
As a nation, as collectively.
So when we get and the Constitution nowhere authorizes foreign invasions. Nowhere. So we have these 700 military bases, and we have a 125-year history of sending military great people. The military has some of the greatest Americans I know. I'm not at all besmirching or attacking military people. They're great American citizens. But there is no authorization in law for them to go traipsing around the world. There just isn't.
Right, right.
So when we get that straight, now we talk about who gets military weapons? The military. Who is the military? Citizen militia. All of this discussion has to start turning that way, and I'm really hoping that InfoWars is going to turn it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when people talk about Concord and Lexington, they weren't just coming for the muskets; they were coming for cannons.
Yeah,
the Minutemen owned cannons.
That's right.
They owned the state-of-the-art military equipment.
State-of-the-art
at the
military
time.
Equipment.
Right. They owned weapons of mass destruction, so to speak, or whatever. But
night vision stuff, whatever we need to defend ourselves, that's what we're supposed to have. We mm-hmm. are the military. Mm-hmm. So when the gun lobby gets this straight, when all of us that own military-grade weapons in our homes, we start understanding, internalizing, we are the military. Mm-hmm. We'll start getting this thing right. We won't worry about clip size or you know, this or that weapon size. No, no, no. We have all of it by law.
It doesn't change what you're saying here is absolutely right. I would say the Marines were originally part of the Navy. They were a permanent force, and
that's
were a quick reaction force, and they were a small force.
So poor
you know,
Army.
Compared to
you know,
the,
we're getting
yeah,
down
that's right.
to saying,
we're down to the
you
Army.
Guys, you great guys in the Army. You know, you're a bunch of...
Keep an officer's corps, but, you know, it's the real Army is the
Who
militia.
Who's the officer's corps?
Yeah.
The states.
Right,
the states.
Exactly.
Only the states.
Yeah.
Okay, so... We get that down right. So mm-hmm. we are the military. Now, how do we fight back? How do we turn this year, 2013, how do we turn the American meta-narrative for the first time in 150 years, right here with InfoWars, the point of the spear, and turn the American meta-narrative around this year? We can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a book 2 years ago, This Bloodless Liberty, and I describe how we can do this. So the Declaration of Independence said that, if you recall, that, you know, whenever our government turns so tyrannical as to take away life, liberty, or pursuit of happiness, we have the right and the duty to alter or abolish it.
Yeah, and that's in the first opening paragraph. That's the part of it that they don't have you memorized in government school.
Yeah,
they stop it abruptly right at that point.
but we don't have, here's my point, we don't have to alter it. We don't have to abolish it. Mm-hmm. We just have to enforce our law.
Mm-hmm.
So 200 million AR-15s right here. Are we going to use them or not? Are we going to enforce them or not?
Mm-hmm.
So we're flopping around, letting this government slap us around and take our land and take our money and take our kids and take everything else we have because we don't understand the power that we have. So let me first say I did an article called The Red Roots of the GOP. Sometime last year. I have it up on our website.
Mm-hmm.
And in that article, I explain, and this is for the GOP people, I explain how the GOP started as a Marxist party. Karl Marx wrote the Communist Manifesto in 1848. He was a huge fan of Abe Lincoln. Abe Lincoln was a huge fan of Karl Marx. Most people don't know this. Karl Marx was working for the New York Tribune, and He was a famous journalist. Can you believe that? Here. Yeah, yeah. Not in Germany. Here.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
So,
yeah.
So Lincoln, they don't see this. If you read the article that I wrote, you'll understand. It's got links. You can go look it up. Sure enough, there they were. The GOP had followed on the heels of the Whig Party, the 1%. Mm-hmm. The Whig Party had followed on the heels of the Federalist Party, the 1%. The Federalist Party had followed on the heels of the Loyalists to King George, mm-hmm. the 1%. So the 1% has always had this conservative party, always. Mm-hmm. It's the 1%. They control stuff. I'm sorry, guys, but that's the GOP. Mm-hmm. That's where it is. That's its lineage. Mm-hmm. That's where it comes from. So the second thing, I unpack that in this book. The second thing that I unpack in this book is the war to enslave the states. I wrote another article recently that I have on our blog called The War to Enslave the States. And I chose an illustration that I think captures what's happened to our country. For 150 years, really, really shrewd, the 1% said, okay, how can we take America, split it in two, equal opposite forces, hating one another, North v. South. And what is it now? Mm-hmm. Donkey v. Elephant.
Left versus right.
Left versus right. Mm-hmm. It's this false dichotomy. It's this false structure. I hate you, you hate me. That's what happens is we get so caught up with one another, fighting one another. Meanwhile, they're stealing all our stuff right out the back door of our house while we fight.
Right.
That's the idea. That is the second thing. The war to enslave the states is the only proper name for that war. Because mm-hmm. what happened during that period was the states before the war, before Lincoln's era, were the creators of the Constitution. They were the creator party. They were the parties to the Constitution. We were an allegiance of states. Article 4, Section 4 says we're going to have a republic, always a republic of sovereign states, right?
And similar to if we were to have a situation where if we decided that we wanted to leave the United Nations, which mm-hmm. was a creature of right. sovereign states, and all of them came back and said, no, correct. U.S., no, you're not leaving, yeah. and we're going to invade
exactly.
you with the U.N.
Exactly.
Army, right?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
essentially what happened.
Exactly.
You know, the sovereign states had created the United States government, and it changed it from the United States, as it's been pointed out in documentaries, the United States are, is what they used to
the
always
United
say,
States are.
To the United
that
States
exactly.
is. It exactly. consolidated everything, and that was exactly. what founders were concerned about, was consolidation. They talked about consolidation of power. They wanted division at multiple levels within the federal government and between the federal government and other areas. And so
yes.
they're very careful to make sure they had that division. That all ended with the consolidation of the Civil War.
Our enemies were wise. Now we need to be wiser. That's all. We outnumber them 1,000,000 to 1. We have the most powerful law on earth, the longest standing written constitution on earth. So, we just need to go on offense.
Mm-hmm. So, tell me about the indictment engine. To me, that is a really unique thing that you've got is the indictment engine. But tell us a little bit about that. I got some questions that I can ask you about.
Okay, the America again is a new organization, a membership organization that gives the American people the top power back over government. Okay, that's our goal. We are going to be the top power over Washington, D.C. The way to do that, you've got offense and defense. You've got a spear and you've got a shield. So the spear is the indictment engine. The America Again indictment engine is, it's the first permanent enforcement we've ever done of the Constitution. But this mm-hmm. is a permanent mechanism to keep doing this for the rest of American history.
Now, you're talking about indicting members of Congress, right? So that's
yeah.
what you're looking at.
Seizing their assets and criminally indicting them and putting them in their state penitentiary for many years. You do that to a few of them, the rest of them will get the picture pretty quickly. And the reason we do state, not federal, the minute, you know, all of these things going on with federal laws right now, mm-hmm. when people are challenging federal laws with nullification actions, nullification was the mechanism that Jefferson liked. The state legislature nullifies what the federal government does. It's a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Interposition was what Madison liked. And that was, you get in there and you move before the federal government and you stop them from doing it at all. You don't mm-hmm. go react to it. You stop them. Mm-hmm. I like interposition. That's the America Again indictment engine. We go, when they pass a law, and they do this all the time, when they pass a law, federal law, that violates the Constitution, we can't go after a constitutional breach. That's a federal matter, so it's federal matter jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. It falls in the federal courts. They trump us every mm-hmm. time. We'll never win.
Right. They look at it as a policy issue and their prerogative.
Sure, or they'll call it politics or mm-hmm. they'll do whatever, but right. it's federal. It mm-hmm. falls in their courts. Mm-hmm. The federal courts work for Congress, not us. Read mm-hmm. Article 3. Okay, so we need to keep it in our states. We need to give the 50 states and the thousands of state courts back the power that we should have. We do have. We just have an exercise. How do we do that? What the indictment engine does is it's a set of algorithms, and I don't want to go into proprietary details. It's a set of algorithms that targets the action they just did, the violation of the Constitution, and harmonizes it with that politician's state penal code. Finds the penal code violations that look like and feel just like what he did. Goes and gets him on those. Mm-hmm. Okay? Right here in Austin, Tom DeLay was convicted of two counts of, what was it, money laundering, I think?
Something like that,
Tom DeLay was the second, he was the second highest member of the House of Representatives when he did that. Mm-hmm. This was the first time this has been done. A state court criminally indicts a member of Congress for what he did while he was in Congress. And that state court won. It convicted him. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to do that all the time for the rest of history with every member of Congress for every breach and violation of the Constitution. How cool is that?
But now with DeLay, that was because of money laundering or campaign finance mm-hmm. type of violations, that sort of thing. So you're saying that you can find things that harmonize with
target
that.
Target rich. Right now, there are so many violations of state penal codes happening. If you harmonize them in this way, it's not hard to find. I mean, there are.
I mean, you know, we just saw a situation where members of Congress were caught doing insider trading. Mm-hmm. And, of course, their response was, oh, we'll exempt ourselves from that. You know?
Yeah, Title 32, Texas Penal Code, fraud. I mean, I'm telling you right now, we have the goods on every member of Congress. Every member of Congress. Hmm. The big crime is the money crime. You cannot, gold and silver is the only lawful money of the United States, according to the law. Mm-hmm. They don't care. Since 1862, they haven't cared. Mm-hmm. So, again, we have them on that one, and we will have them on that one until we have lawful money again. But there are lots of other crimes that we have them on. So the indictment engine is our offensive spear, now mm-hmm. our shield. The shield we have is we've got 19 legislative actions. We've got 19 actions, 19 laws that we want to bring back that we want to get, we want to regain, recoup 150 years of lost liberty. I mean, all the stuff that people have been asking for, all of the things that we need, not just term limits, not just getting out of the UN, not just giving us real, you know, lawful money back, all of the breaches of the Constitution. We're going and we're going to, one at a time, we're going to start passing these laws. Now, how do we pass them if they've never been able to pass before? Mm-hmm. You know, like anchor babies or whatever. We've tried these things before and they've never worked. When you have a spear, an indictment spear against the guy's back, and you say, look, oh, you want it? You want to talk about plea bargain? Fine. We'll work with you, Senator. Mm-hmm. Now, here's what you're going to do. Just like...
Yeah, I saw on your website you were referring to the Magna Carta, for example.
Right.
They got King John to sign it
by basically showing up with swords and saying, look, guy, you don't leave here with your head unless you sign this thing. Well, mm-hmm. actually, he sealed it, you know, in wax. Mm-hmm. They said, you either seal it or you die. How do you like that deal? You know, mm-hmm. that's what we're essentially doing. You either going to spend a lot of time in prison, lose all your assets, or you play. How mm-hmm. do you like that? You want to obey the law now? That's the indictment engine. And so we start giving them our laws now. Mm-hmm. Congressional term limits, real lawful money. You're going to stay out of the internet. You can't touch our internet. You can't, you know, this anchor baby thing has to stop. You're going to have to seal our borders. We just start taking back everything that we've lost.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've got a website.
AmericaAgainNow.com.
Okay.
And
people can go there, get more information. They can see these articles. They can sign up.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Great.
And I hope you will sign up. And I'd like to give a couple of personal notes to people. First, to you. To the people watching, to my friends, to my fellow Americans, You know, I know it's been hell, and since Obama was in office, and since Bush was in office, and since, you know, Clinton was in office, and the other Bush, we've had hell. But it's been our fault. We need to do something about it. It's not going to happen by itself. I'm not going to do your job for you. Only you can do it. It's time to go on offense. Join us. To Obama, I want to talk to you, man. I know you'll probably never see this, Obama. I can't call you president because you've never been my president. But don't feel bad. George Bush wasn't my president either. Clinton never was my president. You guys don't deserve the title. But you're the best thing that ever happened to us. I thank God for you. I thank God that you were elected, and I thank God that you were reelected, because you've woken us up. You've pissed us off. You've made us turn back to Christ. You've made us go back to the Constitution and say, what in God's green earth, what's happening to us? You have made us think about that. You know, your legacy, Mr. Obama, is going to be that you woke the sleeping giant. Thank you. We appreciate that. AmericaAgainNow.com.
Great. Thank you very much. Yeah, he put executive orders and dictates on the map, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
thousands and thousands. Great. Of course, George Bush was pretty good with that, too.
He
but
was
he's
too.
He's
he
exceeded
too.
George
but
Bush's
I
stuff.
Love and Obama. I mean, he's just the best. And his wife? Oh, man. They're just the best. Yeah. They just keep us. They keep us so angry. It's so great.
Well, thank you, David.
Thank you.
Best of luck. We hope this works out for everybody.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for leading.
We need you to join. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that concludes our show for tonight. If you're watching this on YouTube, please consider getting a subscription at Prison Planet TV. It helps to support our operations, but it's a great resource for you and for your friends. You can have up to 10 people streaming simultaneously from the site, watching our news reports live each night instead of delayed a day. And we also have a lot of documentaries. All the documentaries that Alex Jones has done are available there at no additional charge. So please consider Prison Planet TV. Also, take a look at InfoWarsShop.com. You'll find a lot of resources there that also help to support the operation. We have new T-shirt designs, water filters, you name it. It's all there. Well, that's it for tonight. We'll see you tomorrow night at 7 Central, 8 Eastern Time.